Music industry secrets. Music industry secrets. Music industry secrets. Spilled. Hello, 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 and welcome to Music Industry Secrets Spilled with me, your host, Lucy May Walker. Now, if you haven't heard of this week's guest yet, then I promise you, in the next year or two, you absolutely will, because she is going to be huge. She goes by the name of Becca, that's B-E-K-A, and she has 1.5 million monthly listeners on Spotify. She just released a single called Don't Call Me a Friend, absolute tune, and it featured on a ridiculous amount of playlists on Apple Music, New Music Friday. She was also not only featured on Spotify's New Pop UK playlist, but it was actually her face on the cover. So I feel so blessed to get Becca on the podcast, especially at this early peak in her career. We talk about how she got there from her collaborations with other artists, building her amazing team around her, how she found her manager, how important her look is to her brand, and to be honest, just a really good, wholesome chat. So here it is. I really hope you enjoy it. Music Industry Secrets Spilled with special guest and singer-songwriter, Becca. Becca, welcome to Music Industry Secrets Spilled.
Woo! I feel so honoured. I don't know if I have enough secrets for you, but I'm so honoured to be here. I think you're going to give me some.
I'll try. Sometimes I get carried away and I want to like answer the question I've already asked the guest. I'm like, oh, shut up, Lucy.
There's definitely space for that in our kind of chats, I think.
So we met at, I never know how to say this, Drake Yolanda funding. It was almost like an audition thing.
Yeah.
And I remember, because obviously no one really knew each other. No. And you came a little bit later and I thought you were one of the judges. So I was like, oh, make sure I make a good impression.
I love it.
You were sat with the judges. Do you remember?
And it was so awkward because I just sat down because that was the only space. And then the judges came in and they sat where I was. And I felt a bit, you know, you don't want to be like teacher's pet, but you're also like, yeah. I don't want to move because I'm very comfortable. Yeah. It's very awkward.
But I remember, like, so you were there, and then I think just before I went up to sing, you had moved to the back, and I had, like, a really quick chat with you. And, you know, just some people you're just, like, drawn to. I think it's because you called me a queen, and I thought, I think we're going to be friends.
It's because you've got the queenly, like, talking, like, open, vibey energy that I just love, and it's, like, my favourite kind of woman. So I felt like we just...
Ditto. So yeah, I just thought you'd be really good for this podcast because you gave me loads of advice on that day.
Oh my gosh.
So I've been stalking you for about 4 hours yesterday on social media.
Love it.
And I kept scrolling back to like the beginning of Becca. Wow. I don't know why I did quotes, you are called Becca.
No, but that's not my full name, so you're right.
Yeah.
Becca.
Becca. I remember on that day actually someone kept calling you Rebecca and I was like, that's not her name. With a K.
My protector.
So, you started off, this is the first thing I could see collaborating with, tell me if I'm saying the name right, Hon? Yeah.
Correct, smashed it.
Great. Because you see it written down, but you've never said it out loud, and I was like, I don't know what...
Yeah, and in other languages it's called Hone, so you're right in questioning it.
Okay, so you started off collaborating with Hon, you like... featured on their tracks, you toured the world with them. How did that come about?
So I knew them from uni and we had this one really close friend called Pete, and so Pete was our like bringer togetherer, and they were just hilarious because they were a few years ahead of me and they were kind of writing at the time, and I just thought they were hilarious because they'd always wear tweed jackets and those like pointy shoes, and so they look like twins. Anyway, we were really good friends, and then a few years later, like way down the line, they got in touch just out of the blue and said our BV has gone to do BVs for Dua Lipa, slay, industry secret, and they love her, Naomi's amazing, and would you be up for doing BVs? And so I was like, yeah, but to be honest, I didn't really know how Hon was doing or what Hon was. And then had some rehearsals with them. We had the underplay of their Love Me, Love Me Not album. And at the time, it was like an 800 cap venue. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is amazing. What is all this undercap rubbish? Like this is incredible. And yeah. I didn't really know like how well they had done. And it was at that show that the team saw our version of Crying Over You. Mm-hmm. And they said, why don't we get her to do the version on the album? So that's where the kind of Becca thing spiraled from.
And sorry, and going back to uni, which uni did you go to? And did you do like music or something?
I did, yeah. I went to the Academy of Contemporary Music, which can have a bit of a bit, you can feel a bit of shame when you say it, I think, within the ACM community. But okay. It actually did what it said on the tin, which was it gave us, you know, like business acumen. I studied vocals and...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it was fantastic. And it's like a fast track course. So you do your degree in 2 years, done, ready to slay.
Amazing. Thank you.
You're welcome.
when I first met you at the Drake Yolanda audition, you sang an original song called I Will Be The One You Fold. Oh my God. I love
your version.
I've been singing it all day. But I kept getting the words wrong. I kept saying, I'll be there when you're naked. And I'm like, no,
that is it. That is it. I will be there when you're naked.
No, when the world has left you naked.
When the world has left you naked. I don't even know my own song.
Come on.
Do you know why it's funny? Because everyone always, my friends sing, I'll be there when you're naked. Because they're like, it's such a pervy lyric.
Yes. That's what I've been singing.
That's who I am.
But yeah, so when I met you, I didn't know who you were. And you didn't know who I was, but I loved that song. And then I went and stalked you again after. I think I'm a bit obsessed with you. I went and stalked the song and I was like, it's got like over 2 million streams. That is huge. Well, that's just on Spotify alone. And I'm sure on other streaming platforms, it's got even more. And it was BBC introducing track of the week on Radio 1. Sorry. So it seemed to, like, from the Hon collaboration to releasing your first single, it seemed, from the outside, it seems like it happened really quickly. Is that right?
I think, also, when you're reciting this information, you're really making me feel fabulous, so thank you.
Well, good.
Do you know what? I think they actually felt like there was a little bit of pressure because with Hon, I'd had this Location Unknown feature with them as well as Crying Over You. And because they do so well in Asia, and Asian fans are incredible, their Asian fans specifically, there was this sort of bubbling away of like Becca. And so when I decided this is what I wanted to do, after having done other projects and other kind of permutations of, you know, being an artist, I felt a bit of pressure that this first thing needed to be good and right and authentic. And then obviously as you start on that artist journey, as you'll know, you realize pressure ain't helping nobody. But I think, to be honest, it was the team that I had in place at the time and the deep dive that I'd been able to do on, I guess, the why behind why I do music. And then I think that why is what informs your decision making when it comes to releasing music. So that first song felt like it was able to have a good bit of love and a good bit of push, because the team that I'd been working with had been so great in us doing the foundational work, I guess.
And the BBC Radio 1 play, that came from BBC Introducing?
Exactly, yeah. Right? So the BBC Introducing team in the, what was Nottingham now is BBC Introducing.
East Midlands?
Yeah, East Midlands and Midlands.
I'm West Midlands.
Okay!
Yeah.
The Midlands is the way. And there's a guy there called Dean Jackson who is a legend. And I don't mean that in the sense of like, he's a legend. I mean, he is actually legendary within his, like, his world.
Yeah.
And everybody you meet loves Dean. And so we'd uploaded it to our local BBC Introducing. And then Dean just got in touch. And I think from that relationship, he just has really backed us in this last, you know, 2 years, year and a bit.
Yeah.
And I am so grateful for Dean. And it was through that... He then popped it up to the, you know, the main BBC Introducing that filters into the Radio 1 world, and they picked it. And when I got that email, I was so shook because it said Jaguar. It was like love Jaguar, and I was like, who is Jaguar? And then when I did a bit of research on her, and it was this really kind, full of beans and excitement email that says your track has been singled out as a song that's going to be played on Radio 1 for a week on all these shows.
And you're like,
is this a con? You know, you're going back to see, oh, they want my money. And turned out it was actually
Wow. Radio 1. That's it's crazy. It's amazing. But also, it, like, again, it's that pressure, isn't it? It's like, okay, this is my first single. I've already done this, this, and this, and this. Yep. Like, where do you go from there? Like, sorry, I'm so negative, but that's not where negative. My mind would be. It was like,
And I think
you've got to keep it up.
Right. I don't think what you're saying is negative. I think it's strategic, because you have to constantly be thinking strategically, don't you, as an artist? Yeah. But I think at that point, because it felt so stratospheric compared to where we were, which was we'd released this I'll Be There song, and then by the time I got that email, we'd had this second song with Han, which was More Than Friends.
Amazing.
And it was just me in my home in the pandemic, like releasing music and having meetings with people who I'd never met. So to get that email, I think it actually didn't feel like pressure. It felt like so out of this world, crazy, weird, that I didn't feel I could do anything that would help it in a way.
And doing that in like 2020, like, because I was looking back, I thought surely she's not like popped up in 2020, because that was the hardest time I felt for artists, but it just seemed to work for you.
Yeah.
Amazing. Oh, I didn't even know you then, but I feel so proud. When I met you at the, I keep talking about this, Drake.
Love it. No, but it was a big moment. It was our moment.
It was. I loved that whole thing. So for people listening, basically, both Becca and I won the Drake Yolanda Funding Award. And there was like 2 days. So you got shortlisted for like the top 20, and that was almost like an audition day. And in that day, we had to perform our song and then we had to pitch. And I remember speaking to someone, I won't say his name, but I'm sure you remember, I was speaking to this guy, because we were like one of the last people and we were there for absolutely hours. So then me and you just sat there chatting. But before that chat, I got talking to this guy, kind of like someone's manager, let's say. And I was telling him how I'm gonna go and pitch and say my funding, I want it to go into radio, like I felt like really good about it. Have you got any advice? And he basically was like, oh no, you're barking up the wrong tree. Told me that I should not be talking about that, like you should do this and this. And he really got into my head. And then I left him, went and sat with you and told you, and you were like, you sat down and you're like, Lucy, trust your gut. You know why you're here. I've just watched, like, I don't even think he saw me sing, so he didn't know anything about me.
No.
But yeah, you like totally bigged me up. And that conversation, I'm going to say it, I feel like I owe the funding award to you. Like, I don't think I would have got it if I didn't have that conversation with you.
Oh my gosh,
because
thank
he
you.
Got in my head so much, and then you just were like, turned my mindset.
But you
around.
Knew, but you knew before what you were going to say, so it was you. It was just that all I said to you was, you're a queen, say what you were going to say, you're right, you know you. So it's down to you. You knew.
Thank you. From one queen to another. But yeah, in that conversation, I remember you were saying, like, go in and tell them all these things. And, like, you were asking me, like, have you got a team? Have you got this, this, this? And, yeah, I remember you being really passionate about the team of people that you have around you and how important it is. Because we can't do it on our own.
No.
We have to rely on so many people. So I thought it would be good if you could explain the team of people you have around you.
Yeah.
How influential they are to your career.
I think team is the epicenter of the whole journey, because fundamentally you're trying to set yourself up for life, aren't you? A long career, not just will people love me, will I have be like a flash of the pan moment, but this creativity that I have, this little spark of idea that somebody else believes in, how can I facilitate that to facilitate me for life? So
you're so articulate.
Oh my gosh.
I can't even say the word. You are, I'm like, she's saying words, I don't even know what she's saying.
I'm taking the day off after this and just having a little cry after this encouragement. And I think for me, because I've been to a music uni, I had a lot of friends in that world. I'd done, you know, being an artist in another way, in a duo format before and other things like that. And I think I'd experienced just the mental game that you have to play to even believe that your song is good enough to be recorded. Then you wrestle with the song to get the production right, then you wrestle with it again in the mix in your mix. Even mixing alone is like a battlefield. So it's such a journey, and at every point you're then also probably singing about something that's vulnerable to you, or it's got some, you know, experience of yours. So the whole thing is this extremely delicate baby. And I think what I'd really, I guess, in coming into this, I wanted people who would be able to back the bit of the vision and the why for me of what my music's about, but also know me as a 360 degree person, because, you know, as a, I think also as a writer, you're quite probably quite a feely person, and your emotions and your feelings, they influence your decision making. And I needed someone who was going to be able to be okay with if there was something wild going on in my family, that I'm not going to be able to deliver things maybe in the same way. And we can want to have this air of you know, professionalism, which is that you can turn up to a session, you can deliver every time, but that isn't the human experience, and it's not realistic. So I say that to say that when I was then thinking about, I guess, that first member of the team, which would be my manager, what I wanted, I needed somebody who got me as a person, like loved Rebecca, and loved is important. Love me, needy and desperate.
I did.
Love me, please. And then could also have, be my face to the industry. And I think that's the big thing. I love people. I'm energized by being around people. So if I were in those meetings, I feel like I could back myself to present well and connect, because that's what I love about, you know, being alive. So then the idea that then I might have somebody who wasn't like that and wouldn't represent me.
100%.
I've had that before, and it wasn't good. So I needed that person who got both myself, could represent me, but then also had their own entrepreneurial spirit and wanted to like run fast and innovate, and someone who I cared about their career as well. So, because if I'm putting into them every day and they're taking 20% of what I do, I want to be like, yeah, I back you and I rate you. Please take my money, take my success. Let's all like rise together.
And I'm going to say his name wrong, but it's like Thando or something?
Tando.
And how did you meet him?
So I knew Tando from being 13. We actually grew up together and we were really good friends. And he was a groomsman at my wedding. I was a groom's lady at his wedding. Really close. But he's always been somebody who, when I was in these different points of my career, I would be speaking to him about different ideas and thoughts that I had. So when I was touring, I think for the third cycle with Han, I was thinking about the fact that this Becca entity was starting to grow, and you know, what do I do with that when I'm over there? Like, what's my responsibility to myself? And would speak to him. And he's just a really amazing friend. He then started to manage an artist in Nottingham. And because Joel Baker, actually, but good research. At this point, it was an artist called Jerob, Jerob is like, just to pause for a moment, Jerob is going to be stratospheric. And I've said it here. He's wow. He also does manage Joel Baker, who is also absolutely unreal, but that came later. So Tando was managing Jerob, and as a friend, I was just observing how he was going from like strength to strength with his peers, and then with people who were way above him, like in experience, they were mentoring him. And I was just thinking, do you know what? You have that entrepreneurial energy, and equally, you know me, you know my life, you care about me, and we share a set of values also as people. And after having had a few meetings with my lawyer, kind of put a few different meetings in with different managers, I just started to realize that I needed that care.
Yeah.
And then I needed that kind of energy that he had. And so I just took a bit of a risk, to be honest. And I just said, look, we are already working together in some sense. Mm-hmm. He had heard the music and was playing it all the time and loved it. And I was like, it would be my honor for us to, you know, partner, and let's have some probationary period, but let's do that. And would you want to do that with me? Because to be honest, the probation I think is more for him to work out if he can, like, you know, work with the nutter. And and I think from there we share, he's such a sparkly, warm, fantastic human, and that's been so amazing for me to watch him fly, and he's absolutely kicking butt. He's doing well.
I feel like I can see that just like from your bond on like social media. And so I know social media is not everything, but I think you can just tell that you have a really good relationship. And it's so, I've got my manager coming on the podcast. And I'm asking him, like, one of the questions I'm going to ask is, because people, I think the hardest thing ever is choosing the right manager.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And sometimes people go with like their friends, but they've got no experience. But it sounds like you've got the right balance of a friend that you were already working with.
Absolutely. And I think watching him in my initial phases of kind of it was the very beginning of the pandemic also when we started working together. So we had some space, we had slowness, we had the fact that everybody was on their laptops and couldn't meet. But I think watching him also, I didn't want to make him, you know, hook his, what's the word, cart to this horse. I'm a horse, apparently.
I've never heard that expression, yeah, but I don't like
know if
it.
I'm not sure if it is one, to be honest. But yeah, I didn't want to weigh him down either if it was something that was then going to become a pressure for him. So I think we both had observed in one another, you know, is this something that we think could work? And I think having, for myself, having worked with friends in the past, I felt like I had an understanding of how delicate it is. You're right. It is, it's a really delicate art form. And I think communication has been so, so key in me being able to say, look, I'm a flawed human being. What can I, you know, how am I doing? Is there anything
aren't
that I, what I can, you know, what can I do to be a bit better? He might be listening to this thinking, you ain't asked that lately.
Yeah, but in my head. Amazing. In October, you sold out. This is just after we met, actually, because I was like, oh my God, I'll come to your show. You're like, you can't because it's sold out.
Oh my gosh. Who is this so girl? Me.
You sold out two headline shows in Nottingham, your hometown, and London. You've supported people like Griff, Laura Mavula. These are big gigs. And I'm not saying that you're a new artist because you're not, but in the eyes of the industry, you are a newish artist.
Yeah.
And they're big. So and performing live seems to be something like you're really, really passionate about. Mm. And your shows, I've so gutted I couldn't come because they looked so good.
It was fun.
How much effort do you put into kind of building your live shows, and is there anything you do to make those shows memorable enough? Because like selling out your first headline show is amazing. How do we get those people to come back?
Oh my gosh. I think those
pressure,
shows, yeah, no, it's a great question actually. I think those shows were, again, down to the team. Mm-hmm. You know, starting with Tando, then over that year, we then spread into picking people who we felt were akin to the family. And that's what we're trying to build, like a bit of a family team. Yeah.
Do you have a booking agent as well? Sorry.
So one of those, one of those key roles was somebody called Jess Kinn, who works for One Phoenix, who are a live agency. And we'd had, it was actually our first meeting in person that me and Tando had ever taken because of COVID. It was with her. And she had this infectious, amazing personality. And also she had, you know, they're like, they had done really well also as a team, and they're quite new as well.
Okay.
And she has an amazing career that she's had. So I think those shows were completely down to, you know, her, again, being like a little extension of the team and her being amazing. But I think then when it comes to the actual show, you're so right. You can have, you can be playing on a lineup that has Griff on it, and you can sham your show, which is always a moment where you're like, oh my gosh, the music could be good and whatever, but you could sham it. I think for me, when I'm having a show, I like to think of it just as people in my like living room, and it's my space. And I think the more authority you take over the room, and I just mean in thinking, I'm not here to impress you and you're not here to impress me, we're just here for this like
together.
once in a moment thing. And I think that helps me take the pressure off, is feeling like these are just friends. And that's also the feeling I want. I want people to come to shows and feel like, oh, I made a little friend somewhere in the crowd, or I danced and just lost myself and I wasn't like very British for a moment. I was, you know, I was losing my head, which is a very un-British thing for us to do. Because music is that, isn't it? Music's meant to like liberate us, or liberate a little bit of a feeling or our bodies. So I think that's the kind of goal for the shows. And then I think in the prep, I have an amazing MD called Daniel Newcomb, who works with me to work out how do we take these songs and make them feel great live, which can be challenging. When I played the Griff show, that was just me and Daniel, but my songs are quite a full sound, and I didn't want to have something that felt really slow and laborious and emotional. And equally, I wanted to, I guess, keep the integrity of the songs, but also not just have a backing track with everything in. So I think finding that middle ground, he's been really kind in doing that, you know, alongside me. And I think that's also a point of real vulnerability, is all these gaps in our knowledge, all these things that we don't know. It takes a lot to sort of or it feels like it takes a lot to say, hey, this is something I don't know about. I know I should because I'm a musician, but I can't create my own live show. And I buzz off collaborating with others. So when he came in and he's forming ideas and sending them over, oh, it's been like such a godsend. Because it allows you to do the bit that only you can do, which is the playing and the connecting and the chatting in between and the, you know, like letting yourself go as well, which is scary.
I think that's a really good kind of thing for artists listening to this to think of, to like ease that pressure when they're, especially like headline show, you know that everyone there has come to see you. So they're already on your side. So it's so much easier. And then, yeah, trying to get out the mindset of this is me and I have to make, like show off to you.
Yeah.
You actually have to just go, they're here to like sing along and enjoy themselves. So maybe it's not about us. It's about, well, it's about all of us together rather
it's
than
so
just
true.
Artist. And well, not everyone gets that right. So I think that's probably something you're doing really well.
Thank you. I think the purpose behind everything is it just helps when you know what am I trying to get out of the show. So I have a shows coming up this year that do feel a bit overwhelming, but I think when I think, what do I want the outcome to be?
Money!
I want some cash, man! No, not in live music.
Not happening.
Not happening, mate. Not happening.
I think people think that you do as well, because I've got this headline show. Oh my God, it's such a nightmare. That in February, I'm not sure, this might have already come out or not when I do the show, but
okay.
I think people will see, but oh, it's like a sold out room. Wow, she must be doing really well. It's like, No, I'm barely breaking even. Like the only way you really make money is if you sell a lot of merch, especially if you have like musicians. Yeah. I think for your headline show, you had, was it five of you, six of you?
Yeah, so there was keys, drums, guitar, bass. So four musicians and then myself. And then the team, you know, it's expensive.
Oh, sorry.
No, I was just saying, it costs a lot.
Yeah. I always bring up the money thing in this podcast and people are probably like, stop asking me that. But I think it's kind of nice to know this whole podcast is supposed to be behind the scenes and it's things that you don't think about, right? When I was stalking your Instagram yesterday, I got really jealous because you performed on CBBC. Okay, so side note, I have a song with CBBC in the title and I've not played CBBC, so how did you get that?
Oh my gosh. Well, I think from how I feel about you and observing you and stalking you as well, you've got that like spark of personality that probably when you were younger you thought, could I be a TV presenter?
Yeah.
Am I right? Yeah. It was in our like in our blood as children watching Blue Peter. So yeah, that moment was pretty nuts. I have somebody who, we have a team that we work with called Your Army who do our radio and TV. And when I met these guys, I thought it was really funny that there'd be anyone trying to push TV or radio. Radio, I was like, okay, I can kind of understand that. But TV, I was like, I'm just a little gal from Knotts. I don't know what TV show is going to be tricked into having this very new artist. But it was through that relationship that Emma Bailey does my like TV plugging, and she's like Bridget Jones. She's got all the sort of warmth and love that you have when you watch Bridget Jones, but she's an absolute, like, fully together, organized, badass queen.
Yeah.
And she got that opportunity because we'd released You Got, and You Got was kind of, it came from this imagining, like, I guess all the things you'd want to say to somebody if you were never going to see them again, or if somebody coming up, somebody growing, somebody that you love, like, what are the things you'd want to remind them that they have and they carry? And so I guess there was also an aspect of that that I felt was like for children. So I think the song came out and it had a good moment for that. But again, I think also watching that program, it's a program that has on quite a lot of new artists. So I think it was a road in that obviously wasn't Graham Norton yet.
That is my dream.
Come on, Graham.
One of your dreams.
I mean, who doesn't want to be on Graham Norton? I've been in the audience and watched.
Yes, me too.
I think it would be very funny though, because I know that I wouldn't be funny, and I think I'd just be like, can I cuddle you, Graham? I think I know that something like that would come out and Graham would just do that clap. He'd just look at you and be like, no.
Oh, I have a TV secret.
Go on.
You probably know if you were in the audience of Graham Norton. Well, this is what happened to me. So when you're watching the show, the musician is the last thing that happens. But when I went to watch the show, they were on first.
Oof.
Was it the same for you?
I actually can't remember, but
you heard it here.
I love stuff like that. I need to and be telling. I need to spill some more secrets. Let me up my secret spilling.
That was one that I was like, because TV, I think, is a whole different world. I don't really know much about the TV world, but I would kind of encourage people, if they're nosy like me, to go and sit in the audience of a TV show, because you learn so much, and like, it feels real when you're watching it on TV, but like those interviews, especially Graham Norton, they're all prepared. Mm-hmm. If they have comedians on, they already have prepared their joke, and Graham knows what question to ask to get them to say the joke. It's
okay.
It's actually very fake, but
yeah.
Please have us on, Graham.
Please, Graham. I mean, Graham, it's so funny, isn't it? Because TV is, you're so right, it's its own beast. And I think you think, oh, if you get to a certain level, of course you can get on TV. But the bookers on those shows have relationships with people, and they have people who they like and people who they don't like. So there will be artists that they've said categorically, you're never coming on, because they are the gatekeepers to that show. So I think, again, having people who represent you well and are your energy, whatever that is, if you're fabulous, then great. If you're moody and mean, fantastic. Like, whatever your thing is. But those relationships are so key, because Emma has a great relationship with, you know, different people within her industry. And so when she's making an ask, it's like me calling you and asking, can you come on my show?
Yes.
Because we're in love. We're going to, you're going to say yes.
We are. Yeah.
Whereas, were we not, you know, it feels again like this cold thing. And I do think that is a bit of a secret of the industry, is that we think, or we forget, that the power of actual relationships, when you're making an ask of someone and they're actually a friend, or they're someone you're friendly with, or you've been for drinks, or you genuinely know their grandma's not been well, like that, you know, it really goes far. It goes far to know people and to care, actually care about people.
100%.
It's not a commodity that's lost.
I mean, I feel like I bitch a lot on this podcast about the same thing.
But let it out.
I get messages like, so an example, last week I posted that my headline show is like nearly sold out. I get a message from someone that hasn't spoken to me. Well, doesn't really know me, but like, you know, hasn't spoken probably 3 years. Wow. As soon as they see this, oh, there's a bit of a buzz around this artist. They slide into the DMs like, hey, do you need support? And you're like, that's not how you go around it. And I think people are so, to be fair, I did that to James Blunt recently.
Love it.
Just on the off chance. But I think when you do that, I think you don't realize how obvious it is on the other side. And if anything, it puts me off. I'm like,
right.
You need to support people on the way up. You don't just wait till they're like something and then go, oh, hey, do you remember me? Like, be a make real connections and not just this networking thing.
It's so true. And also, even on the James Blunt example or this person you're speaking about, what you can do is also be honest. I think honesty is, it's a bit scary, because it can make you look like you're unprofessional. It can make you look like you don't have it all together. But those are facts. We don't have it all together. So for that person to have, they could have sent you a little Insta saying, I know this is really cheeky and we haven't spoken in 3 years, but this is what's going on for me. I actually have just heard your music and I'm freaking loving it. Is it too cheeky to ask, do you have a support? And if they'd said that, it would have disarmed you, and you would have been like, do you know what? I love that you just pointed out the obvious, like you've called out the elephant in the room. And I think if you don't ask, you don't get, but there is a way to ask. And I think, that there is a way to ask. And I think that is that's one of my industry secrets. There is a
really
way to ask.
Really good advice. Like that, and what, that took 10 seconds more to say it in that way than, do you need support? No,
I don't. Oh, love it.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, God.
I might have to take that out. so,
take it out.
You have a series, which I love, called Cuppa and Anata.
Yeah.
Cuppa and Anata, where you basically have a chat, a bit like this, with people in the industry, and you've had big names. Again, you've had Griff on that. You've had Joey Howard, who plays bass in Paramore.
I love him.
How do you know all these people, and how are you so good at networking? I guess it's exactly what you just said, right? You make real connections.
I think this is actually probably going to spill what my industry secret is, but I won't, I'll try not to spill it and save it for you. But I think,
thank you.
Yeah, I started Cuppa and Anata because I love tea. I'm a tea addict. My grandma's from North Yorkshire and she lives in the West Indies, and she's still every day at 4 o'clock. She has tea and China cups. So that's going to follow you to down the bloodline, and it's hit me hard.
I can see you've been drinking from your, And
just love
a
it.
Teapot there as well?
I do actually, yeah. I just love tea. I like being cozy. I love getting to actually connect and be curious. Exactly what you're doing. And so I equally also have like lots of things that I want to know about that are a bit naughty to ask and or might seem a bit offensive. And so I kind of wanted to make a space where we could all find out this information together about cultural things and about your experiences. And, you know, if you're famous, do you suffer with anxiety and actually genuinely what is that like? And just make space for the stuff that we're all experiencing as humans and we want to know about and understand how others deal with it, I guess. So having said that, then the people that I want to ask, some of them were, you know, they're big dogs. And the biggest dog will be Michelle Obama and just speaking it out to the universe. That's going to happen. That was just me putting it out there to the world.
Fine.
But I just started with anyone that had a kind of a relationship with or anyone I'd met along the way. And I think Joey Howard, for instance, happened because my friend who I write with called Steph Marziano, incredible writer-producer, had been writing with Joey Howard and also with Hayley Williams. And Steph is like cited on that, her Hayley's album, and she wrote some of those songs with them. And that was a real moment for her. And yeah, super proud of her, actually. It's just incredible. But then, you know, we started writing together. And then in the pandemic, I wrote with her and Joey, and I just really loved Joey. And so we kind of kept a little bit of relationship, but also I think, you know, we hadn't spoken for a while when I then asked if he'd come on Cupid and Atta, but I just messaged him and just said, I think I've always remembered him and just said, this is what I think you'd be amazing for with this. Would you do it? And he was like, yeah. And then
he was so great as well. I watched that.
He was amazing. And I had someone else called Emma Bresci who I'd been following, and she's like a model. She's an activist. She's also a presenter. She's just incredible. And I've been following her for a while. I have no relationship with her.
Okay.
And she was someone who I just had to like, you know, just
cold call,
just go for it. And yeah, which leads into my secret, which I'll tell you at the end, had to cold call her and just get her on. And I think what's been great is using those initial relationships has built the Cupid and Atta series, and I've been able to also grow in it and not be terrified going in high with, you know, Michelle Obama, but being able to work it out as well myself.
Have you ever thought about making it into a podcast?
Well, that is the next permutation of it. Yeah. That's going to be where it goes. Yeah.
Please invite me on.
I will.
I love the series.
Love it.
Sorry to keep talking about it. You took that to your live show as well. You had something.
Yeah.
Right?
We had some tea.
I've got good research.
You really do. Yeah. People had. I think that feeling of tea and hot drinks represents disarming yourself. Like you sat with a blanket in your tracksuit and then you're like, you know what? Yeah. Let's actually have a chat. So at the show, I had my two favourite things, which is Prosecco, because I'm a basic bee. And
yeah, me too.
No champers, Prosecco, and tea. And that was really lovely. And I think at the live shows, as hopefully I play in other places, the dream is to be able to have a cup and a natter before the shows. So, you know, if we're in Hamburg, let's have a cup and a natter, a few people can come. And then I can ask them the questions about these things that we're all experiencing, but they have a specific lens as people in Hamburg. And I think that is the point for me of Cupid and Atta. Is it's like a global conversation. How do we have global conversation and then grow some empathy as we hear like other people's perspectives?
Oh, I love it. I can see all the merch ideas and stuff. And
oh, please, share them.
So
share
good.
Them with me.
So good. I will. Also, just quickly, I really wish that this whole video was going out because you look immaculate. Always.
Thank you.
I actually normally wear like tracksuits, and I was like, I need to wear something nice.
You look slaying. You also look slaying the day I met you. It's a fantastic outfit.
Oh, thanks.
I remember.
But yeah, fashion, I feel like I feel like it's a conscious thing that you do. Like sometimes for me, it's like a very big afterthought. Like, oh my God, I've got a show in a week that's been scheduled for 2 years.
Yeah.
What am I going to wear? Whereas I feel like you take a lot of time and effort. Sorry. I don't know if that sounds bad.
It doesn't, no.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I totally know what you mean.
I think fashion is obviously a very natural thing for you, but it looks like you really take time on like the whole look and brand of Becca. So talk to us about that.
So I worked with this team called 161 who did a lot of the deep dive of the Becker world. And basically I met with them and had been meeting with their CEO, who's a really dear friend of mine again. His name's Matt Miller. And we'd been sort of working out, like, why do I do this? What's the point? What is the point of this whole thing for me? Not just music. I like playing songs, but am I going to write about being up in the club? No, probably not. Okay, why?
No.
And so doing that and then meeting with the team and doing like a real deep dive into my influences, the things I want to talk about, the conversation that I want to have. And then the colours I'm drawn to and the textures, everything. And we formed together, they did, this thing called a style guide, which has been almost like my brand Bible, if you like. And at the moment, it's been like about 2 years since we did it. So we're on the reboot at the moment. But in doing that, it really helped me to recognise how important visuals are to me and the visual identity. And I just love clothes. Clothes are like a... they just give me life. I'm a very visual person, so when I, you know, see crazy Vogue old ladies in the street, I feel drawn to them because I want to. I think it takes a lot of bravery also to wear what you actually want to wear, be that a tracksuit or be that like a white, you know, blanket, like whatever it is. It takes a lot of bravery to do you, and I think for me, clothes represent me liberating myself. And sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes I'm like, oh god, what am I gonna wear? But then if I shut up for a sec and just relax and think, what's my body need today, then it becomes, feels like more of a I guess a way of just feeding myself. Clothes are almost like food to me, in that if I feel a bit rubbish but I need to focus and I need to get stuff done and I have to leave the house, maybe I'll wear a suit just to be like telling my body we're serious today. Equally, if I'm just at home chilling out for the whole day, I'm going to wear pajamas. I'm going to have a shower and then put on some fresh PJs. Yes.
I've got massive tracksuit underneath.
I love
it.
Yeah.
The nice shirt.
You've got to be comfortable. And
gotta
I think
be comfy.
And I think our bodies really respond to what we put on them. And so, you know, when you're in an intimidated situation and you've got like, I don't know what it is, maybe it's like your arms are out and your armpits are feeling hot and your shoes are a little bit too uncomfortable, you would so have been better just to have worn a tracksuit. And I think that is what clothes do for me. They liberate me. And so, and they're a little thing for my creativity that I just enjoy.
I love that that's like a big part, like, because I love going on your Instagram and just seeing all the stuff that you're wearing, as well as listening to music. It's like this whole package deal that you get with Becker.
Love fashion.
So we're nearly at the end. We've been emailing back and forth, and you are a busy woman, and you seem to be in the studio like every day. What's going on? And also, how often do you? It seems like you're on like a writing period at the moment. How often do you kind of write? What's your writing process like?
Yeah, I mean, don't believe the hype. I live in a one-bed flat, so I can't really write too well at home. So my setup at home is a bit bleak because home equals the womb for me. It's like the cozy, safe place. So writing with others, I don't have anywhere to bring them, so I end up looking like I'm in the studio a lot. But I'm writing with other people. But I think this last year has been writing. Last year was the first time I collaborated with people that weren't like close friends. So January of last year was the first time I did that. And it started on Zoom, which was hilarious. But some of the best songs like came on Zoom.
Yes, I agreed.
Yeah. And then following that, I think I've just been working out, you know, who are the people that I feel like a real connection to, and then working with them to get songs finished. And for me, the production's so important. Like it gets in my stomach. And so being in the room when that stuff's happening is really important to me. And sometimes I'll start songs and start the production myself, but it's an abomination. So then taking that, it's like I want it to keep the DNA, but then also not sound rubbish. And so, I kind of collaborate with new people, but then also with people who I just really connect with. Because again, when you feel safe, you're going in your tracksuit, you're chilling, and then you're more likely to say, there's some horrendous stuff that I want to write about, kind of share it with you, and it's safe. Whereas constantly building those new connections can feel sometimes a little emotionally draining, I think. And then also having to then reestablish safety and then, you know, come up with whatever your idea is, that's also emotionally draining. So there's only so much of that my soul can take.
For artists that like are thinking, I really want to write with new people, but don't know how to go about it, what kind of advice would you say for them to like reach out to people?
I think looking at who's written on songs that you really like, you know, if that's Maggie Rogers, then great. Equally, if that's,
love,
I don't know, a brand new artist with 500 followers and you're loving their music, then amazing. Just look at the credits. And I think then messaging them, just being like, what is your schedule saying? Do you have any time for a little sausage like me, even if it's just an afternoon? Yeah. And building like that connection that way. Also, I think, you know, if there's like a if there's any publishers sniffing around, sniffing you, because that's what they do, right? People sniff people. I'm quite disturbed by what I've just said. If there are any publishers at all that you're having conversations with, they're having conversations with you, and you know, sometimes you might get like a random email through and it can feel a little bit generic and you're thinking, what is this?
Yes.
Who are you? Like, you can also use those things, like leverage them if you like, if I can be so crass, and say, you know, is there anyone that you look after? Put me in some sessions and let's like court a little bit that way. Let's dance that dance. Because fundamentally, you know, a publisher, you're not signing anything or giving away anything by allowing them to make those connections. And that's what they do. They're meant to put this person with this person. So yeah. I think, you know, the role of the dating the publisher world is that time can be quite fantastic for building those new connections. And once you have them, follow them up and keep those connections yourself. Don't let them just stay in other people's hands.
I'd also say, when you were saying about the generic kind of email, because we've all received those, and
yeah.
again, it's so obvious, and it's not, just don't do a copy and pasting. You can do a copy and paste, but then amend it and like
yes.
say something personal to that person, like,
yeah.
oh, Becca, like, because I've had like an email like, oh, we love your Instagram, and it's like, you've literally just posted my name. You don't love my Instagram.
No.
Maybe you could say, oh, Becca, I really love this song that you did and this session. And it doesn't take a lot to kind of make it personal.
It's so true.
You know?
And that's everyone in the industry. Shout out to everybody making things more personal.
Yes. We have come to the end of the podcast where I ask you.
Yeah.
Becca.
Yes.
What is your music industry secret?
My industry, music industry secret is sending voice memos and videos. Now, I know this
yes.
might not be like exposing.
No, yeah, I'm already
this,
there with
this
you.
This might not
Go
be
on.
Exposing something about someone or anything, but I think the power of the voice memo and the video is unprecedented. The way that I have had built connections or had people on my cup in an atta who I don't know is I will literally send them a video on Instagram. I'll just record myself and be like, look, I know this is a bit weird, but I love you. I'm in love with you. Or, you know, whatever I genuinely feel. And I don't plan it. I just let whatever come to me. But that's also because I'm an external processor. So if you're not like that, maybe think about what you want to say. And I'll say, this is what I do. And I really would love to have you on. Are you ever free? Can I sneak you in? That would be amazing. And I think, and also like when I meet somebody who I love or I meet a member of a team or whatever, I try and get some FaceTime with them, being I'll send them a video or I'll send them a voice memo or Zoom. I think in the beginning of my whole artist journey, when we were talking to different labels, when we met my label who are an indie label, we were on Zoom. They were in their home with their, you know, Sports Direct mug. And I just yes. thought, you know what, this is it. Having you with your Sports Direct mug and me being able to just say, what tea are you drinking? Like, is it Yorkshire? Is it PG Tips? It's disarming and it gives me a little bit of power back in that, you know, being with people who can feel intimidating is intimidating. So being able to ask them what they're drinking is fantastic. But then equally, you know, having a new person in the team or someone new who's doing front of house or whatever, being able to just give them a little bit of myself and my time by taking a moment to voice memo, it just builds that genuine connection. And I think when you have genuine care for someone or loyalty or respect, and it comes across, you feel it. Whereas when someone's being insincere, you also feel it. So I think just taking a moment to let somebody experience you as a person is my industry secret.
It's my favorite. I think that's my favorite. I'm gonna start doing that more. Just kind of going back to one thing that I love about you, right? The day that we met, and it was maybe there was five or six of us at the end of the day waiting for our like pitch time.
Yeah.
I remember that you know, people were nervous. We don't know each other. It's very industry chat, and everyone's talking about, like, we're almost in competition with each other.
True.
And you sat there and you were like, guys, if you could eat anything right now, what would you eat?
Oh my God, I'm a crazy
dog. And it
dog.
Just kind of, this, it just, and I don't think that was like, you didn't think that through. That was just a genuine question that you would ask your friends.
Yeah.
But it just, everyone was just like, ooh, and they just like, relaxed, and you made everyone feel really comfortable in the room, and it was like one of my favorite moments where I was like, yes, I need to be friends with her. I love her.
We were starving at that point, so
we
I was definitely
so
I was being very greedy, but I just, you know, I think, like, woman to woman, super easy to be competition. You're seeing them, they're your competition. Woman to man, sometimes it's like, oh, you're, whatever you say is going to top trump me because you've got more experience and you're a man, and that's like the patriarchy.
Oh, don't.
And then, you know, person to person, we are like, oh, you're going to like me. Am I enough for you? Am I okay? And I think when we can just be people and actually care, it is disarming. And it, we need to be disarmed because we have to, like, what's the word, like, shake off that, those fears. And we're all nervous. What's that fear thing? It's like false.
Oh, imposter syndrome?
No, you know, is it the acronym? False expectations appearing real. I think false expectations appearing real or something like that, where you're going into something and you're thinking exactly what you're saying. Everyone's going to hate me. Or, like, I remember videoing Emma Brescia, who's super cool, and being like, she's going to think I'm a nutter. And then I was like, you are a nutter.
Yeah,
that's fine. And people might hate you, but at least you leave knowing I've been kind and I've given you what I would want from you, which is a bit of normality and kindness. And I definitely do not do this all the time. I'm definitely terrible at replying. I'm definitely appear more busy than I am because of a lack of organisation and emailing people back. So don't get it twisted. But yeah, I think kindness is just, it's what we want, isn't it?
I love you. Okay, thank you so
much.
Thank you
so
much for coming on. It's been so fun. If people want to find your music or social media, where can they find you?
So you can just at Becca on Toast on all platforms. Beka. No C's, no H's, no nothing. Just Becca, Beka, on Toast. And then just Becca, Beka, in all other spheres. And you can go and learn some BVs and then come and sing for me at a show.
Oh, I want to do that.
Do you want it?
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I just love that woman. And I thought I was being kind of cool about it in the episode. But just listening back, I realise I sound like the biggest fangirl in the world. But you know what? I don't care because it's true. I am. Now, if you happen to be listening to this on the day of its release, Becca is actually headlining a BBC introducing show tomorrow. That is the Tuesday, the 8th of March, and that is at Powerhouse in Camden, hosted by previous guest Abby McCarthy. So I'll see you there if you're going. And also don't forget to check out her brand new single, Don't Call Me a Friend. Little plug for myself, as always. I have just announced that I'm working on my debut album this year, which is so exciting. So I have a Zoom gig this Thursday, the 10th, where I'm going to be playing some of the songs from the album live for the first time. So tickets for that on my website, lucymaywalkerofficial.com. But back to the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you did, make sure you're following us on whatever platform you're listening on. You can also follow us on social media, Music Secrets Pod, at Music Secrets Pod, and tune in next Monday for another brand new episode. Until then, love you, bye!